From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. And Robin, a lot of extreme weather again around the world today. As we talked about yesterday, you can't link every event to climate change, but it is certainly playing a part in the intensity of what we are seeing. Example is Portugal, on the verge of breaking a European heat record. Temperatures on the Iberian Peninsula could surpass 116 degrees. About 40 of Spain's 50 provinces are under a heat warning.
Yeah, the AP did this roundup earlier this week. Sweden's highest mountain lost its status because the glacier at the top melted.
Yeah.
And there's a grocery store chain in Finland inviting people to stay overnight at the store in Helsinki to stay cool. You know, slumber party aisle 9.
Right. And here in this country, Death Valley has broken the record for the hottest month anywhere in the world. The data is preliminary, but in July, the average temperature was 108 degrees. And at this very moment, the weather has created a looming disaster in Lynchburg, Virginia. Residents are being told to evacuate their homes as heavy rains threaten to cause a dam there to fail. Joining us now for more is Ashley Ann, a reporter with WDBJ7 in Lynchburg. Ashley, what is the latest with this dam?
So the latest right now, and, you know, speaking with some emergency officials, they were actually rather surprised how well this dam held up, or that the fact that it's still holding up. So it has not broken at this point, but it's just one of those situations where we don't know if it's going to and when that would be if it does. So it's really just a waiting game until these inspectors and surveyors can get out here, look at things and see where it's at. And it's a matter of this water. The water is still flowing underneath the bridge past the dam. And it's just really a matter of if the rain lets up, the water isn't flowing as intense, if that's really going to help here.
And the reason that there is such an emergency right now is because you got, what, 4 to 6 inches of rain just last night.
Yeah, and so that's what actually makes this story interesting. So, I mean, it's been a very wet summer, to say the least.
Yeah.
But this has been, it was an incredible storm that rolled through the area last night, dumping, 4 to 6 inches of rain in the area, and just really forcing a lot of areas, to have to close down roadways. And what's interesting about this particular one is it involves this dam, which is on a high-risk list for needing repairs in the state of Virginia. And that's what makes this so interesting, is that this is already in an area that people are looking at this and going, this needs attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anything that's going to bring more attention than what is happening right now.
And by the way, this is a very old dam. This dam was built back in the 1930s.
Yeah, 1934, to be specific, is when the dam was built. And it was really to expand and improve Route 221, as it's called, / Lakeside Drive, to bring traffic through the area to the neighboring University of Lynchburg, which sits right here. And that's actually how the lake was formed, was because of this dam. So it is old. It's an earthen dam, as it's called. So it's made of like dirt and other compounds holding it together and whatnot. So it's definitely an old dam.
Well, and if this dam were to completely fail, officials are saying it would flood parts of Lynchburg with 17 feet of water in just 7 minutes.
Yeah, so that's what their estimate is. If the dam were to break, it would be a 17-foot wall of water would flow or rush from the lake that this is supporting into a residential area called Blackwater Creek, which is this low-lying area below the dam, and it would flood that area in a matter of 7 minutes. Now, how high that water would be in that area all over, I'm not exactly sure, but the intensity of that water moving into the area would be the most damaging part.
And a lot of people have already evacuated that area. Do you expect more evacuations?
At this time, we have been told that 124 homes or structures would be affected in this area if the dam were to break. I do know as of late last night, the earliest I've heard from some folks is they were asked to leave around 11 p.m. And then I've heard some folks were asked to leave around 5 this morning. But they have just been going door to door, police officers, firefighters, just emergency officials, knocking and asking people to leave. And from my understanding is it's not exactly a mandated evacuation, but a highly suggested evacuation to leave their home just because there's such an uncertainty about this dam.
And are you expecting more rain?
Yeah, so we're expecting several more inches, actually. Stronger storms are supposed to be moving through the area this afternoon. And as I'm sitting here right by the dam, it's actually a pretty heavy drizzle at this point.
That's Ashley Ann, who's a reporter for WDBJ7 in Lynchburg, Virginia, as we watch the unfolding situation there, waiting to see if this dam does collapse. Ashley, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'll keep an eye on that. But meanwhile, in Tennessee, underdog candidate Bill Lee, not the former Red Sox pitcher, but the businessman and first-time politician, won yesterday's Republican primary for governor, beating Diane Black, who gave up her seat in Congress to run for governor and had been endorsed by Vice President Mike Pence, though not by President Trump. Lee will now go up against the Democrat, former Nashville Mayor Carl Dean, in the fall. Another winner in Tennessee yesterday, former professional wrestler Glenn Jacobs, also known as Kane, elected mayor of Knox County, the third largest county in that state. Social media is having a field day with that one, so let's bring our social media roundup wrangler, Femi Oke, host of...
I love the names you come up for me. Hello, everybody.
Host of the stream on Al Jazeera English. Femi, start with underdog Bill Lee winning the Republican primary for governor over Diane Black, who was backed by Mike Pence, not Donald Trump, even though she lashed herself to the president's policies. What are people saying?
Well, Mike Pence actually tweeted out, there are great candidates running, but Diane has been my friend for years. We served together in the House and she has my support. And then Bill Lee was way behind in the polls. He was an unexpected winner. These were the kind of words and descriptions and phrases that were being used to describe him. Underdog Bill Lee, political newcomer Bill Lee, businessman Bill Lee. And in Sunny Day, he sums it up pretty well on Twitter. He says, people are tired of politicians. Good job, Tennessee.
An unknown is running there. So, and what about professional wrestler Glenn Jacobs? We should say his nickname is the Big Red Machine, elected mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. And people were quick to point out that, let's listen, he played one of his theme songs at his watch party, Slow Chemical Finger 11. And then he made a joke about his past.
Yeah, buddy just reminded me we talked about having a cage match and we never did that. There's still time. Well, thanks everybody.
So we might be seeing a cage match there in Tennessee. Glenn Jacobs, former WWE star, turning to politics. Remember, Donald Trump was an honorary member of the World Wrestling Hall of Fame. So what's been the response to Glenn Jacobs?
Also, Robin, what I'm seeing, and this rarely happens with male politicians, but he's been described by how he looks. 6'8", 300-pound WWE wrestler, well, former WWE wrestler. Mm-hmm. Glenn Jacobs, on his own Twitter account, describes himself as a proud resident of East Tennessee, small business owner, wonderful family, blessed liberty lover, candidate for Knox County Mayor. He needs to update that today. And he's getting lots of support from his former fans, from the WWE. Congratulations to at Kane WWE on being elected mayor of Knox County. And another one, that's my mayor. Look out for the memes, a lot of wrestling memes, a lot of very descriptive smackdowns are being shown as ways of fans saying, hey, good job. And then Fill Your Day replies to Jake Tapper, who was basically saying, this is how the mayor race ended up. And Fill Your Day says, is this a parody account?
No.
He couldn't quite believe the WWE wrestler, former, is now mayor of Knox County.
Okay, so people there, we'll see what happens there. Meanwhile, the online message board Reddit revealed this week that it was hacked and that users' personal information was compromised. This is usernames, passwords, emails. This is important because Reddit lets people be anonymous. So we talked this week about the pro-Trump conspiracy theory cult Q. They spent a lot of time on Reddit. So an anonymous message board, and now people's emails and names are out.
A major, major data breach. Reddit calls it a security incident. We had a security incident. They put their own post up a day ago. Incredible amount of detail, Robin. And at the end of their own post, if you use Reddit, you'll know this. What are your thoughts? Log in, sign up, comment. And the commenters absolutely did. Honestly, though, props for all of the information. It's a good read, says one Redditor. Another one says, as an InfoSec professional, thanks for relaying this information. Very specific details. The detail with which this, what happened, how it happened, when it happened, what got lost. Incredible amount of detail. Detail that's not normally shared. And the Redditors are really appreciating that. And of course, it wouldn't be Reddit without a little bit of snark. And one of the Redditors says, are you guys going to work on detecting the Russian bots? Or is it a net positive for you because they count as page views?
Okay, there's that. But I just want to, we got a minute here. And, you know, we're constantly hearing stories about people's past social media activity coming back to haunt them.
Oh, it's a big trend right now.
Yeah, we have Hollywood actors who've launched a social media campaign to get Guardians of the Galaxy director James Gunn reinstated. He was fired last month because of his past very offensive behavior on Twitter. Tell us more what people are saying.
So this letter took a while to get together. It took about a week to post this letter. And these are all the major actors and actresses
Chris
in
Pratt.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Pratt was one of them. Zoe Saldana was another one. Chris Pratt says, before sharing this group letter, "I don't support James Gunn's inappropriate jokes from years ago. He's a good man. I'd personally love to see him reinstated as a director." That's the campaign. But beneath it, and this is the pushback.
Real quick.
"I can't agree with you with this one from Angie. People keep saying it was years ago, but he was 41 years old at the time. He was old enough to know better."
Yeah.
That is the debate that continues to go on about old tweets that you post and then you become well known and then they come into the public.
Beware.
Field.
Beware.
Absolutely.
Femi Okay, host of The Stream on Al Jazeera English. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The South Florida Gulf Coast is seeing the worst red tide in a decade, and wildlife is suffering the consequences. Fish, dolphins, and manatees are washing up dead, and endangered sea turtles, which are currently in their nesting season, are dying as they head to the beach to lay their eggs. Dr. Heather Barron is a veterinarian and research director at the Crow Clinic in Sanibel, Florida. She joins us now. Dr. Barron, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And how bad is it right now?
Well, it is definitely a struggle. We've had hundreds of seabirds, and right now about four times as many sea turtles as we would normally have by this time of year. Tons of fish every day, beautiful little seahorses and eels and our sea turtles, dolphins, manatees, even a whale shark. So it's really striking. We had 20 very large Goliath grouper washing up on our beaches. Four of them were over 200 pounds. It really is making a very demonstrable impact.
And this is because of red tide, which is an algae bloom. Tell us more about what exactly it is and why it's killing all of these animals.
There's probably over 200 different species of algae, but only about 20 of those are harmful algae. And what we're experiencing right now is known as a harmful algal bloom. And this particular type is what's known as red tide. And that's caused by an organism called Carinia brevis. And this organism produces a toxin known as brevetoxin that is a neuro or nerve toxin. And so what we see is that these animals' nervous systems are very affected by this toxin. They become very disoriented, and potentially if the toxin levels get high enough, they can even die.
And red tide comes every year, but this one has been around for longer than it usually stays.
This time it's been going on since about October of 2017. And so that's quite a long time. And of course, the other problem is that it's actually overlapping with the sea turtle breeding season.
Right.
And that normally goes from April through to October. And so, unfortunately, with the two coinciding, those large adult critically endangered sea turtles spend most of the year out at sea, but of course they come into our near shore waters to come up on our beaches to do their nesting. And it is certainly going to have a tremendous impact, particularly on sea turtles nesting in our waters, because of course sea turtles show nest site fidelity, which means they come back to the same area year after year to nest. So I have no doubt that we'll see the impact from this particular bloom for years to come.
And we're already seeing it. And I've seen some of the photos of, you know, a dead sea turtle, a sea turtle that was being treated at the clinic for the rehabilitation of wildlife in Sanibel. So you're already seeing the effects of this. But why is it so bad? Is this human activity? Is this climate change? What's causing the red tide to stick around for so long?
Well, again, it is a natural phenomenon. However, there is no doubt that people are contributing to it. And of course, there's a confluence of factors that really result in having such a bad red tide. And some of them are natural factors. For example, Hurricane Irma, which came through and hit our state pretty hard back in 2017, really kind of stirred up everything in Lake Okeechobee. And that included decades worth of fertilizer. And of course, algae are just a plant, basically, and they're going to expand their growth and their numbers with those kinds of nutrients in the water. The warmth of the water, certainly climate change has been a big factor. The fact that the winds are coming from offshore, so that's pushing all the algae in and keeping it, you know, kind of next to our shore. So all those things are definitely having an impact.
What's the risk of red tide for humans? I know that I've been around a beach when red tide has been there, and you can kind of feel it when you take a breath.
If it's bad enough, and certainly right now it is pretty bad, or if you have a human who has an underlying respiratory illness, for example, asthma, people will be fairly severely affected. The other way that sometimes people are occasionally exposed is through what's known as neurotoxic shellfish poisoning. In other words, they actually eat shellfish from the affected area. And in that case, they can present with signs very similar to the animals that we're getting in at Crow. So severe gastrointestinal distress. So you might be spending a lot more time in the bathroom than you normally would. And if it gets bad enough, potentially even neurologic signs and potentially even death.
That is Dr. Heather Barron, who's a veterinarian and research director at the Crow Clinic in Sanibel, Florida, talking with us about red tide. It has been around now for much longer than usual. Dr. Barron, thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure as always.
President Trump's national security team is telling the public, yes, Russia did interfere in U.S. elections and is trying to do it again. They spoke about the threat yesterday at the White House after Facebook announced earlier this week that it had removed 32 pages because they were believed to be part of a coordinated political influence operation that is currently underway. An administrator of one of those pages, though, says Facebook shouldn't have taken his page down, that it was legitimate. Brendan Orsinger is a self-described anti-racist activist who was an administrator on a page called Resistors, which was helping to spread the word about activist events in Washington, D.C. Brendan, what was your reaction when you heard that Facebook took this page down?
I think I was baffled. I think that it's really surreal that I found myself in a position where now I'm getting a lot of messages from folks I don't know saying I'm a Russian troll.
well, and how did this start? Yeah. Who reached out to you in the first place to make you an administrator on this page?
So I began my contact with the Resistors page and the one admin that I had correspondence with began after the State of the Union address and our counter-protest that we collaborated with and were helped by the Resistor page to amplify our event and to help bring more people out. After the event, that account in question that's been suspended, I'm talking about the personal profile account of the person I've referred to as Mary. And I'm not going to give out a full name because I don't know if this person is a person or, you know,
or
until I know for sure. I'm going to put myself in her shoes and assume that, or their shoes, and assume that this person could be just like me and just have been wrongfully booted and had their page taken down, just like we had our Resistors page taken down, just like we had the event to counter the Unite the Right Part 2 protest on August 12th. And I really hope that you'll indulge me for a second in sharing that if we go on Facebook, there's a since we are now behind because our event was taken down, I direct people to Shut It Down DC, hashtag Shut It Down DC, to get more plugged in with local DC organizers so that we can repel these toxic white men.
So that, you still want to have this event?
No, I don't want to have this event. In fact, I think we have to have this event. When white men that call themselves Nazis and alt-right and white nationalists, when they show up in D.C., that's a threat to our community and the people I care about. And if they're going to be there, I need to make sure that we have the resources and the people to show up. And what I am most frustrated with is not anyone else besides Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook for inhibiting our ability to do that and maximizing the effect that we can have as a movement and as organizers here at the D.C. local level to repel and to, right. to counter that protest.
Are you at all concerned, though, that if the people who decided to take this page down are right, that there's some Russian campaign basically to create a group right. like yours so that your group gets in right. a big fight with mm-hmm. Unite the Right, and then we end up with something like Charlottesville, and the whole idea of it is to create trouble and create conflict in this country?
Mm. I think it's important with any event that's created on Facebook for us not to immediately assume legitimacy, because the Unite the Right events are not legitimate in any kind of framework of real organizing that we do here in D.C. on the ground at the grassroots level. And I think it's kind of hypocritical for Facebook to judge the origins of our event when I think I can go back and recall Mark Zuckerberg starting Facebook in order to get laid at Harvard with a hot or not app, a swipe left or right app.
What is Facebook saying to you?
I've been in touch the last 2 days with a really great rep in their government relations department. I really appreciate her communication. I think she was put in a tough position by not being able to contact me until about 8 hours before the page came down, like night of. So we really had no time to talk before Facebook took the inappropriate and premature action and did so unilaterally without any kind of semblance of process, mm-hmm. you know. I think there's a lot of things we can talk about, whether it's First Amendment rights. We can talk about the monetization of amplification and basically the digital megaphone that is pay to promote on Facebook that's been in use with Facebook.
You want to stop using Facebook altogether for, you know, promoting your events?
I am going to spend intentionally as little time on Facebook for now on as I possibly can.
That's Brendan Orsinger, who is a self-described anti-fascist and anti-racist activist. He lives in Washington. Brendan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
The economy added 157,000 jobs in July, according to the Labor Department numbers released today. A little lower than economists predicted, but unemployment dropped back below 4% to 3.9%. Michael Regan is senior editor at Bloomberg News. Mike, you often join us on Jobs Friday. So what do you think? Still a solid economy?
Yeah, Robin, I think it is still a pretty solid report. As you mentioned, the main number is what they call the change in non-farm payrolls, which at 157,000, it was below recent trends that are closer to 200,000. And it was lower than what most economists had expected. But the Labor Department also revised the number of jobs added in the prior 2 months higher. So that adds about 59,000 jobs over those months. So that's kind of a wash. And as you say, the unemployment rate is back below 4%. The underemployment rate also fell to 7.5%. So all told, this is still a pretty solid report.
Well, but which sectors did best real quick?
Well, professional and business services saw a nice increase of about 51,000 jobs. You know, the nitpick would be that a lot of them are temp jobs. But otherwise, manufacturing added about 37,000 jobs and healthcare added about 34,000 mm-hmm. jobs. And the common theme there is all those sectors are – there's some pretty good jobs in those sectors.
All great. You want to see people working. But the trade war with China escalated today. China said it will impose new tariffs on about $60 billion of U.S. goods. This is retaliating against President Trump's proposal to increase tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods from the proposed 10% to 25%. Are we seeing this trade war – affecting the labor market yet?
So anecdotally, there are stories about companies being affected as far as their labor force, both positively and negatively. However, it doesn't appear yet to have been enough to move the needle as far as these national numbers go. But certainly it's something to keep a close eye on because there are many company executives and economists warning that it very well could be a net negative effect on the labor market, at least in the near term.
And what about paychecks? Wages still not really budging. And economists are starting to say, and we heard this today on our program, that the concentration of profits into fewer hands, you know, Apple and Jeff Bezos, Amazon, is keeping wages down. Remind us why and your thoughts on this theory.
Yeah, this is a very hot topic among economists and academics. It's what's called monopsony, which is sort of the flip side of the coin of monopoly. As you know, in a monopoly, the concern is that a big company gets so powerful that it controls the price of goods or services they sell. With monopsony, on the other hand, the concern is that a company can get so big and powerful that they control the price of what they purchase, which in this case would be labor and the wages they pay. This is what an old colleague of mine would refer to as a three-beer discussion. So I'll have to buy you a few rounds sometimes.
Oh, we'll all come, you know, 5 million of us to hear
that's
that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That really is fascinating. In fact, let's take that up again. You know, and it is true, this idea that, you know, fewer and fewer companies, something like 30 down from 150, are, you know, have this incredible wealth. So we'll take that up again.
Absolutely.
And yep. Monopsony.
Monopsony, I know, it's hard to say.
It's like something you need a salve for. Michael Regan, senior editor of Bloomberg News, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay, time now for an electronic music edition of the Here and Now DJ Sessions. Chris Burrell is DJ and host of Hot Mix on WKDU in Philadelphia, where he's also the electronic music director. Chris, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeremy.
And tell us about your show, first of all.
So Hot Mix is an old school reference to the glory days of house music in Chicago. There was a Hot Mix 5 crew of DJs that kind of were playing the latest and hottest tracks as house music was really starting to come into the public's mind.
And today, though, you have brought us electronic music from Philadelphia, where you are. Is there a big electronic scene there?
Yeah, it's a really tight-knit community, and I'm excited to talk about some new tracks.
All right, well, here they are, starting with something a little more ambient. This is Pontiac Streeter and Ulla Strauss with Chat 3. I said this is ambient. This is very ambient, what's going on here.
Yeah, so Pontiac Streeter is a friend of mine named Rory, and Rory and Ulla are part of this crew called Terry Radio. It's a very quirky and personable internet radio station that started in Kansas City, and there's been all these really amazing and talented folks from Kansas City and the Midwest who have started to kind of gradually come over to the East Coast, be it Philadelphia or New York. And Rory, I think, describes this record as ambient tribal.
Ambient tribal, okay.
It's an interesting combination.
And what's going on exactly in this song?
Well, I think there's a lot of different things to kind of pull back here. It's a tongue-in-cheek reference with the whole chat, because Terry Radio has a very popular chat room when they stream online. And so that's kind of where the name of the record comes from. But it's this meandering kind of journey through strange ambient sounds out on Huerco S's West Mineral Limited label, which is really picking up some steam in the ambient circles. So.
Who knew chat rooms still existed?
Oh, I encourage you, check out Terry Radio's chat. Okay. You'll love it.
All right. Well, let's get to the next one. And this is called You Gotta Know. This is the Ron Trent remix by Cassie and Pete Moss. We'll be right back. So this is called four on the floor, which means what, first of all?
Well, four on the floor, you know, you've got a kick drum on every quarter note, so it kind of gives you that mts, mts that non-electronic heads might know techno for.
Okay, and why did you choose this song in particular?
So Pete Moss is a Philly guy who's been in the scene for quite some time, and I just thought it was really awesome how this whole track kind of came together. Cassie is one of the biggest names in dance music. She's based in Europe and has a whole bunch of Philly connections, be it King Britt and some other folks. And the original track of You Gotta Know is really great, but then they reached out to Chicago house music legend Ron Trent, and he just turns in this really musical and bright, like 10-minute plus rework of the track that just keeps you engaged the whole way through. So,
why do you think that remixes take off so much in electronic music, more so than other genres?
You know, remixes allow you to kind of just give a new perspective on a track, whether you want to take it more stripped back, like a dub, where you're kind of removing some of the vocals, or making something more bumping for, you know, late night kind of things. So,
okay, up next we've got Marquise Hawks with Don't You, featuring Ursula Rucker. Feels like ages ago we were listening to the ambient one. You've definitely increased the energy level.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I started off that way. Maybe a reflection of how I might DJ one of my own sets, kind of starting off with some more dubby, chill stuff, and then getting it pumping a little bit.
Yeah, so tell us about this one and Ursula Rucker there, who is a spoken word artist from Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think to call her an artist would be an understatement. She's also just a really amazing activist in the Philadelphia community. She's on so many, you know, chart-topping tracks from over the years, be it, you know, Supernatural, which is probably one of her best-known tracks. And she's still being called upon by some of the world's biggest DJs and producers.
What's she talking about in this song?
I feel like it's about losing yourself on the dance floor and kind of these blissful moments. You know, the track's called Don't You, and Ursula talks, you know, don't you ever feel like, don't you ever want to, and kind of indulging the listener to just really give themselves up and be in the moment.
Okay, the last song you brought us is one that is not from Philadelphia, but you wanted to bring it to us anyway. Here is Percolation by Analog Terra. So why do they call this analog? I mean, it's made with analog synthesizers, but what's the difference between analog and digital in the world of electronic music?
I mean, that's a thick debate that you're getting into there. That there's been many steamy discussions about that, you know, analog versus digital and whatnot. But Analog Terra is she's a music scholar in the truest sense. She literally wrote the book on women in electronic music called Pink Noises back in 2010, I think. And this is her first material under Analog Terra for 15 years or so, I believe.
And are there a lot of women, by the way, in the world of electronic music?
I think there are, and not enough people are giving them a platform to kind of spread their word and their message. Somebody like Analog Terra, who's been doing this for so long and literally studied it and put out a book on it, I think that these are the folks that need more of a platform.
Do you ever find yourself not in the mood for electronic music?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there it comes. When we used to have house parties in my place, you know, we would be DJing or whatever in the basement. And then a certain time would come where it was time to, you know, switch to some sweet soul music upstairs, be it like Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes or some jazz, but kind of some wind down music. Mm-hmm. So definitely.
Well, Chris Burrell, DJ and host of Hot Mix on WKDU in Philadelphia, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. The love I love was a sweet love.
You may have heard of Nutok, the tiny village on the edge of western Alaska that's seen so much erosion, plans are now underway to relocate all 300 or so residents to more solid ground. Warming temperatures forcing humans to adapt. And 1,000 miles to the west, in Alaska's capital, Juneau, a similar scene is playing out. Some homes there are at risk of crumbling into a glacier-fed river, and that neighborhood can't agree. Who should pay for this? Elizabeth Jenkins from Alaska's Energy Desk reports.
At first glance, the neighborhood on Meander Way Drive in Juneau looks like any ordinary subdivision built in the 1980s. But there's something special sneaking along some of the homes' backyards.
Oh, there's more paddlers.
Hello! Welcome to Juneau.
No rain today.
Having the Mendenhall River right outside their door was a huge reason Joyce and Kirk Gehring bought this place. They call it their little slice of heaven.
We have beavers going up and down the river almost every day. Sometimes we have harbor seals come up the river. I mean, it's just, it's a wonderland.
A wonderland that isn't as idyllic as it seems. Besides paddlers and seals, there's another sight visible from the Gehrings. Down the river, you can see a couple of homes that are dangerously close to the river's edge. The situation was alarming enough to catch the attention of a federal emergency watershed program. And for the past few years, the agency has been trying to develop a solution so the neighborhood could be placed on a priority funding list. That plan is to build a large retention wall, big enough to protect 28 homes, including the Gehrings, cutting off several feet of their beloved backyard.
So we'd have walked out our door to a fence.
Each homeowner would be responsible for paying up to $80,000 to build it. But that's not what the Gehrings say upset them the most about the plans. The vast majority of the money was to be spent from federal funds.
Just the absurdity of it all really fired us up.
Especially when you have all those people in California from the fires and the flooding and stuff,
yes. The
mudslides and all of that. That, in our opinion, is what government funds of that nature should go to.
The Gehrings say they knew the risks when they bought this property. River erosion isn't anything new. But what they couldn't have expected was a surprise climatic event that would speed the erosion up. 7 years ago, the Gehrings saw the river rise in a matter of hours. Water started seeping into their grass.
We were just standing there watching, going, wow, is this normal? And our neighbor over here said, no, it's not normal.
It was a huge mystery because it was July. It was sunny.
Aaron Hood is a professor of environmental science at the University of Alaska Southeast. And back in 2011, after receiving concerned calls from the city, Hood boarded a helicopter to try to figure out what was going on. He flew above the Mendenhall Glacier, which feeds the river.
And you don't have to fly very far up before you see Suicide Basin. And as soon as we pulled the helicopter into the basin, you could see all these icebergs stranded. So it was very clear that it had been full of water.
That water used to be ice flowing down from the Suicide Basin Glacier. But as that glacier retreated due to warming, it carved out a bowl.
That's why this area is flooding now, is because this basin is essentially a bathtub that can fill up with millions of gallons of water.
And that's bad news for the Meander Way neighborhood. Because once that water spills over, it will flow under the Mendenhall Glacier and eventually flood the river. It's happened every summer since 2011. Some years were worse than others. Hood says this type of event could go on for decades, and it's possible the flooding could become more severe.
All that is sloughing off, too. See where the rock is falling and the lawn starts sagging?
Nico Buss has lived on Meander Way for about 30 years, almost as long as the neighborhood has been around. Lately, he's been playing the role of community organizer, knocking on doors, trying to get everyone to reach an agreement so the neighborhood could get some kind of uniform fix for the river erosion. He says the federal plan to build a giant retention wall between the river and the homes wasn't perfect, but it was better than the alternative.
Without it, your backyard is going to be gone completely.
Buss wasn't able to drum up enough support in all 28 houses along the river. And with the neighborhood divided, the Juneau City Council decided it didn't want to force the issue and manage the federal funds. Buss says his backyard isn't bad off. He's done his own work to try to secure a barrier. But when he sees the river inching closer to his neighbor's home, just a few doors down, he wonders if that's his future.
Could happen this year. If it cuts under the foundation, the house is going to go like that. For these two houses that are just right here. And then whether or not mine house goes, you know. So you will get a signal. So when you see it would happen, then obviously you get your most valuable items out and get somewhere else.
Kurt and Joyce Gehring, the couple we met earlier in this story, agree with Buss that something should be done about the neighborhood erosion, but not at taxpayers' expense. The Gehrings considered contributing to some kind of community nonprofit, set up a fund perhaps. The idea being the most vulnerable homes would pitch in more. And someday, the neighbors could all fix the erosion problem together. But given the hassle, Joyce Gehring says now she's just ready to move on.
I don't care if their houses go down the river at this point. I am just done.
The Gehrings are putting their own home on the market this summer. For Here and Now, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
That's tough. Here Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.